We're going to get to Cody. We had a couple of minutes before the break. How can I introduce this guy? And I've been thinking about this. I've often talked, I use my in-laws a lot, as you know, to talk about different conspiracies or different things and how they perceive things and their responses. And one of the main responses I've received from them is, that can't be true. If that was true, somebody would have said something about it. Well, people say things all the time, like Cody Snodgrass. Also, you have to understand that when you're in the position like Cody is, when, you know, this isn't speculation. This isn't, you know, a reporter making a video and catching somebody off guard saying something. This is somebody right in the dead center middle of it, who was offered $1 million to blow up the OKC building, the Murrah building there. I've been to that in Oklahoma City. We're talking about somebody who understands the deep state, who was involved, who saw the machinations, who, as his book suggests, choosing the light. Sees a different way for us and is now speaking out. And his story, his courage, you don't think this man has courage. You don't think this man is risking something you do not understand. And we'll talk a little bit about what's happened to his websites, whatever. I am so excited and so honored for you to hear this man's story. Cody Snodgrass, welcome to the Power Hour.
Well, thanks, Daniel, and hello to everybody out there. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, let's just give a brief summary. Who is Cody Snodgrass? And then we'll go into a little bit of the background of your book.
Okay. How long we got before the break?
We got 2 minutes before the break.
Oh. Well, we have a 700-page book called Choosing the Light, Dark Secrets of the Oklahoma City Bombing. It took me 4 years to write it. I worked in Black Ops for a little over 20 years. Was involved in the Murrah building bombing. That's the subject of the book. We're also involved in the assassination of Barry Sadler, the Special Forces Staff Sergeant. And also we're with people that were at the Waco compound and, firsthand witnesses down there. Their story's never been told. But, I died twice in the hospital in an operation called Project Slammers, a CIA op. We can talk about that later. But when I did die in the hospital, I had like a spiritual epiphany and realized that my past ways of walking with the dark ones, I want to do something good. That's why I wrote the book, Choosing the Light. And those stories are all in there. I can go through a historical thing here after the break and kind of get everyone up to speed on stuff, and then we can answer any questions or whatever you need me to do here.
Yeah, we got about 30 seconds or so before the break. The music's about to start. Go ahead. Go ahead.
We always quote the 1982 Intelligence Identities Protection Act, the IIPA. That's U.S. Code Title 50, Sections 4, 21, 426. And I'll get to that after the break here.
Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, put your seatbelts on, get you something to drink, relax, and get a notepad. You're about to hear an insider tell a horroring tale. You think you understand what goes on behind the scenes? You're about to know. This is what we're dealing with. Stay tuned. ThePowerHour.com. Choosing the Light is the book. Stay tuned. Interrupting as possible. Let's just go right back to Cody Snodgrass, our guest, author of Choosing the Light. Go ahead and continue with your history and the background of what we're discussing here today, Cody.
Yeah, thanks, Daniel. The 1982 Intelligence Identities Protection Act, we always quote that. We don't want to break any rules or laws or anything. That's U.S. Code Title 50, Sections 421 and 426. It states the disclosure of U.S. government officers' identity is illegal only if it's done intentionally and with knowledge that the government is still actively maintaining a cover for such operative. We always quote that in relation to CIA case officer John Kerouac, who in January 2013, he got 30 months in federal prison. He inadvertently named an active agent in the CIA's RDI program. That's the rendition, detention, interrogation program down at Gitmo. So the people we talk about are either deceased or non-active. And so from there, my history began. You know, we began it back in 1974. I graduated from high school, and I scored in the top 1% in the SAT turned down recruitment with them at that time. And I began working with some Vietnam veterans, some of whom worked for the CIA in Vietnam. And then fast forward, I went through college. I graduated with a double bachelor of science degree in both mathematics and physics. Went to graduate school at Stephen F. Austin State University in Texas on my master of science degree there. We got to fly the space shuttle simulator at NASA during that time. And then I worked for Chevron Geosciences and Amoco Production Company in Tulsa, Oklahoma as a petroleum and research geophysicist. And it was during that time in the early 80s, from approximately 1982 to 85, that I was involved in the CIA's multiply nested operations over in the MENA, around MENA, Arkansas, with Bill and Hillary Clinton. And the book, we have a whole section on all that. But you fast forward through that, and then I was offered a job to bodyguard Staff Sergeant Barry Sadler. You know, 1965, he had the number one hit single in the U.S., Battle of the Green Beret. And that whole story's in there. It's never been told publicly. Fast forward into the 90s, in September of 1991, I died in what's called Project Slammer. There was it's a CIA operation, but they have an above board, you know, white op, as we call it, vanilla op, and then they had a black op, which was an assassination program. And I died in that op twice. Then fast forward to 1994, I was offered the job by Harold Leonard in October 94 to bomb the Murrah Building. That whole story's in there, which I turned down. And
why did you, Cody, let me interrupt there. We're talking about the OKC building, the bombing of 95. Why did you turn that down?
Patriotic grounds. You know, we can tell the story, you know, after the break when we have time, but I did that on patriotic grounds. I wasn't going to do that against our people here. And I told them that they
just
went too far this time, you know, and I turned from an asset into a liability at that point.
Okay. Just continue on then. Sorry. We'll ask on the other side.
Yeah, we're just fast forward into 1997, 1999, Operation DEA ATF undercover Operation Stingray was conducted in Colorado Springs, Colorado, where I met in that op. I met would later be the nation's top cop, given his award by Vice President Al Gore and Attorney General Janet Reno. And in that op, I was later planted with evidence, false evidence. We're talking about CIA operations in Arkansas and bombing of the Murrah Building and pedophile rings and stuff involving the Bushes and the Clintons. And they put me in front of Judge Edward Nottingham. After planting me with false evidence and lying to the grand jury and so forth to shut me up. And Nottingham was nominated by George Bush Sr., which was director, or DCI, Director of Central Intelligence, in the late 70s. And then our prosecutor was Thomas Strickland, which was directly appointed by Bill Clinton himself. And the whole story of the cover-up and the 10th Circuit Court, that's where they sent me back for his trial, and all of that is in the book. It's a big story, but they finally let me out. We had tape experts that were CIA personnel that had coffee with three sitting presidents, and we had proof that the ATF. We'll go to the break.
Yeah, on the other side, we'll continue the story. It's an amazing story, ladies and gentlemen. We'll get into some details. We're doing an overview right now. Cody Snodgrass, the book is Choosing the Light, and we'll tell you how you can get it on the other side. Stay tuned. ThePowerHour.com. We're so happy to be with Cody, and the book Choosing the Light is kind of summarizing, about four decades worth of stuff, and then we're going to go back in. Just want to give you an overview of the person that we're dealing with here and the information that he's bringing. Cody, go ahead, continue on, my friend.
Yeah, when they had the undercover ATF DEA Operation Stingray in Colorado Springs, during that time, the Columbine High School shooting happened in Littleton, Colorado. That was April 20th, 1999. And a couple of days after that, I went over to ATF agent Butler's house, and we had a discussion. Bill Clinton had come into town, and Janet Reno, the attorney general. And during that time, he asked me some questions. I didn't know we were on a 4-millimeter hidden camera. So I started talking about CIA ops and the Clintons and pedophile rings in Arkansas and cocaine, all the drugs coming in for the black ops down there that were ordered with the Nicaraguan Sandinistas and Contras thing, the Iran-Contra scandal. We were out in the middle of that thing. But anyway, so they planted me with fake evidence. CIA took the tapes. We had the Judge Nottingham, which was nominated by the CIA director. We found out later that every case in the Tenth Circuit that had anything to do with national security or CIA was all steered to him, because they used DOJ Promise software to steer these sensitive cases. So their judge, you know, nominated by CIA director, could cover up stuff for him and make sure it never saw the light of day. They put me in supermax solitary confinement a few cells away from Tim McVeigh, and I had a perfect record, no traffic ticket, nothing, just perfect. The whole thing was a big cover-up, so we hired a tape expert, William Ballantyne, who had coffee with three sitting presidents, Reagan, Bush, and Clinton, in the White House. His job was to bug and debug the White House, and so we got absolute forensic proof that ATF and DEA, CIA all colluded, doctored tapes, planted evidence, so forth. We never were allowed to have a motions hearing in 4 years. Almost all of our hearings were all sealed. They kicked out the court transcribers, the U.S. Marshals. Everything was sealed. And so anyway, we, on July 24th, 2003, Judge Nottingham ordered a hearing, a motions hearing, where I could get all this evidence in the court. And Ballantyne told me, he said, you're going to take down the whole ATF, DEA office there in the Springs. It's going to be a nationwide scandal, and they're never going to let you do this. You know, they're never going to let you get this in the court. So on July 7th, 2003, just a couple of weeks before this big hearing, I'm cleaning the windshield on my Crown Victoria LTD in a Walmart parking lot in Colorado Springs, and I never heard it or saw it. But I heard the motor racing and tire squealing, and a woman hit my car head-on in the parking lot and totaled it while I was leaned across the hood, and it almost killed me. So after I got out of the hospital, I was in an outpatient physical therapy thing, and then I left that on a cane. There was a Colorado Springs police cruiser sitting there idling by the street. Well, it jumped the curb, sparks flying. And they charged me. I thought it was going to crush me again. And inside the car was the nation's top cop, ATF agent Blake L. Butler, dressed in a Colorado Springs police uniform. He shook his finger at me, you know, like, try to get this stuff into court. And so I drove home that night, that afternoon, and I stopped and threw up. I was in pretty bad shape. And my wife and young son were in here in the house watching a movie, and a car pulls up out in my front yard, and I went out there. And in it was Harold Leonard, the guy that offered me the job to bomb the Murrah building. And he told me, he said, you know, if you ever try to get this stuff in the court, we've got orders to murder you. And he pointed up at the house, kill your wife and kid. And so I'd had enough after all this, because the deck stack, you can't. I had to wait 22 years to tell the story I'm telling you now, but anyway, we called Greg Goldberg. My attorney was Harvey Steinberg. He was a Denver Broncos football team attorney here in Denver at the time. And we went up to the United States assistant attorney who had taken the case over, Greg Goldberg. And he said, we're getting a lot of heat on this case. I don't know what's going on here, and I don't want to know. He said, you plead guilty to anything. I don't care. Pick a charge, any charge. I don't care which one, and you're out of here. So I pointed at something. I didn't even know what it was. It turned out to be dealing firearms without a license, which is it's a Class 4 felony. I used to be the biggest machine gun and silencer dealer here in the state of Colorado with Class 1, Class 2, and Class 3 NFA licenses. So this was a pretty much of a joke. But I pled guilty to that and, you know, did all my time and everything. And I made up my mind that if the Clintons would ever get out of office and Hillary out of Secretary of State and everything, that I would break this story. And we did it last November 2017. And so we got the book. We've been selling it all around the world, doing interviews all around the world, and trying to get the story out, trying to enlighten people as to the depth. A lot of people know the deep state and the government's corrupt. They just don't know how far it goes. And so that's a brief overview of the story in the book, 700 pages, it's over multiple decades. And then any questions you have, you know, we can talk for hours about whatever. So,
okay, we got about an hour and 20 minutes left of real time. It's less than that with the commercials.
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing I forgot. Judge Nottingham later on in 2007, after this case, the judge had to resign in a sex scandal with prostitutes. And this is a federal judge nominated by George Bush Sr. And, it was Denver Players owner Brenda Stewart. They had a, strip club, and that was a front for their prostitution and drug rings. And the judge was caught red-handed in it. But, you know, since he was a federal judge, they just let him resign. If it had been me or you, Daniel, we'd have done prison time. Because I had him red-handed, credit card receipts and everything else. So the corruption in the Tenth Circuit Court is absolutely astounding, and it's controlled and steered by the CIA covertly. So we can talk about that, too, so whatever you need to.
Okay, well, I'll just shoot questions at you, and you just succinctly answer them, and then if we go deeper, we'll go deeper. We'll just go. Perception of the world, perception of what's going on. Obviously, the idea that there is a deep state is getting into the public consciousness. I'm talking about America now. Is getting into America's consciousness. Describe a little bit. I mean, when you're involved in this, do you feel like you're untouchable? Are you operating on a world on your own? What is that like?
Well, you're definitely not untouchable. You're expendable. And all the ops, whatever they are, like the Murrah Building op or whatever it is in whatever country you're in, they're all compartmentalized. And you are told to need to know what you need to know to get a specific job done. And a lot of times there's other ops running parallel to the one you're in, or an umbrella op, as we call it, where there's multiple operations running side by side that you don't know about. And the CI director or whoever's running the op, the principal, we call them, they know of what the big picture is. But you're always in danger, you're always at risk, and you're always expendable. And you always have to watch that you're not double-crossed from the inside.
Now, the connection seems to be this deep state to, I don't know, normal America or normal American government, whatever. I don't know what the word is. But the connection seems to be these certain players. And over the last 20, 30 years, the Clintons seem to be right at the top of that. You were involved with the Clintons, or at least at the same time, they're in MENA, Arkansas, involved with the drugs and what have you. The question people have a lot is Hillary Clinton really that bad? From your experience?
Well, she's evil. She's always on a quest for power. The truth never enters into her thinking. It's just whatever is expedient, whatever lie at the moment, to get that power. And they do that through deception and manipulation. And when she was running the Rose Law Firm with Hubble down there in Arkansas, I was over in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at Amoco Production Company as a research and petroleum geophysicist. That was my civilian front. You know, they have OCO's official cover operatives, or NOCs, which are non-official cover, and that was my non-official cover. An official cover is something like a liaison of the State Department or press secretary to somebody or something, government cover. But I had a civilian cover, and we were directly involved in the operations there. In 1984, in February, Congress passed the Boland Amendment, which forbade us to put troops on the ground, basically, down in the regional conflict in Nicaragua. And we were supporting the Contras against the communist-backed Sandinistas with Daniel Ortega. And the Russians were bringing a lot of arms and stuff in there. They were moving drugs, too, just like the CIA was. But our part of the op was up here in the States. There was a three-layer, multi-nested operation. Centaur Rose was one of the code names, Rose for Rose Law Firm, and Jay Bridge and Screwworm. And the one I was in was Centaur Rose, and our job was to move weapons down to covertly support the Contras. President Reagan went around Congress after they passed the Boland Amendment and secretly ordered CIA directors to conduct these operations. So they were illegal.
There's the music. Yeah, there's the music. On the other side, we'll continue right there with the operations. Centaur Rose, and we'll just continue with there. Cody Snodgrass, the book is Choosing the Light. We got to let you know how to get it also, because his site has been hacked. This is radioactive, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Power Hour, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking to Cody Snodgrass. Cody, the movie came out a few years ago, To Kill the Messenger, and also Made in America with Tom Cruise, about Mena, Arkansas, about the CIA. If I were to tell you, or if I were to say that the CIA is the biggest drug dealer of illegal drugs in America, would that be accurate?
It's absolutely accurate, 100%. Now, I haven't seen that movie before. I have not seen that movie.
Yeah, you might want to check out Made in America, really, is about Mena. To Kill the Messenger is, or Kill the Messenger, I don't think it's To Kill the Messenger, but that's about the crack epidemic in L.A., that the CIA was running all the drugs there in L.A., running the crack. The biggest crack dealer in America was the CIA. What's the CIA's purpose from all these drugs? Obviously, money is part of it, but... is it just money? Is it power? Is it diluting the American people? And talk about how they distribute it in their relationship with some of these gangs or front organizations.
Yeah, you're talking about the Ricky Moss situation there, and Gary Webb, San Jose reporter.
Yes, Gary Webb. Yes.
Yeah, he wrote those articles about the Nicaraguans bringing the drugs in, and that was the CIA drugs. I have a friend named Mike Rupert. You might have heard of him. He was an LAPD narcotics detective that confronted the CIA director in public at a meeting out there in L.A. about Operation Amadeus and Pegasus. That's the one Chip Tatum was in, and other operatives, about moving the drugs through there. And it's all absolutely true. And, you know, when we say the CIA, you know, I have friends in the Inspector General's office, or used to be, and they've had dinner here in my house, you know, from CIA, and these are really good people. They try to get to the truth. They try to do their jobs. You can't say a blanket thing, you know, like the CIA. I want to make that clear, because there are a lot of really good, stand-up, good-hearted people that are doing their job in there. And there's also the black operations, you know, where they do the drugs worldwide, like all that heroin from Afghanistan, you know, the opium. I mean, 2017 is the biggest crop in the history of the world. Where do you think that all went, and how do you think it was moved, you know? We're being fed so many lies and so much deceit over so many decades that it's hard to, crack this onion and start peeling back the layers. But my friend Mike Rupert was 20 years in LAPD, and he saw it all firsthand. He told me that when they would bust lower level dealers on the street, you know, they'd make them a deal, and then they'd try to move up to the big fish, and oftentimes they get to the big fish, and there was a CIA person inside the LAPD that oversaw the drug bust. And when it was the CIA's drugs, you know, this guy would tell them, lay off, you know, don't bust these guys, bust the other guys, because that's competition. And so they are the biggest drug dealer, and the biggest arms dealers too. But like I said, it's not everybody in the CIA. It's just certain elements, like General Richard Secord and Ted Shackley, you know, from Vietnam fame, you know, and then they went to Costa Rica. They were responsible for moving a lot of the China White heroin that came in from Southeast Asia over there in the Golden Triangle.
Let me interject here. Is it fair to say there's almost two parts to the CIA, a front CIA and then a dark black CIA,
right,
and somewhere they interface? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, there's what we call vanilla and black. You know, the standard vanilla ops are standard ops that people do in their jobs, and then they have directorates and operations, you know, where they conduct black operations. And there's a need for that kind of security, but the problem we have, Daniel, in our country is that so much of these operations and crimes are hidden under national security, and actually crimes. And that's why they're hidden. They don't want to get caught, and they don't want the American people knowing what they're doing, like the Clintons were doing in Arkansas down there. They were moving.
What's the purpose of all the drugs? What's the purpose of all, besides money? Is it, are they trying to destroy the moral? I mean, is there satanic? I've heard other people come on and say there's a satanic aspect to this where they're trying to erode the morality of the American people, or really the people of the world. But is there something more than just money and power here? What is it?
Well, there are spiritual aspects of it too, where if you get someone addicted to heroin or crack cocaine or methamphetamine or whatever major drug, it does lower your consciousness down to a low level where all you do is crave that drug, and it keeps you down in your lower ego state where your mind's fragmented, you're fearful, you're
a reptilian brain.
It's a reptilian brain thing, and so that's one aspect of it. But I would say the biggest aspect of it, of course, is money. They don't have to go to Congress and get appropriated money, because Congress is going to want to know what the money's spent for and everything else. And like the Operation Centaur Rose I was in down with the Clintons, they watched the money through the Rose Law Firm, through the Whitewater Real Estate with Jim and Susan McDougall, and through the Worthington Bank,
my gosh,
and the BCCI Bank and all that stuff in the Caymans. So that money was Black Ops money, which was used to fund Centaur Rose, Jade Bridge, Screwworm, and a whole bunch of other operations down in South and Central America. One of my girlfriends, Daniel, had dinner with Pablo Escobar at one point, and I've been all down through there, and the drug operations with the cocaine and all that stuff's amazing stuff down there. We're being lied to on a big scale. That's the bottom line.
Okay, I'm starting to get, not agitated, I don't know what the word is when I hear these type of things. I'm just going to put it to you. And the Clintons, this isn't a Democrat-Republican thing, please do not send me emails about this. But obviously the Clintons seem to be the focal point of so much. They're the front man, whatever, of this black op or the connect, I don't know, whatever the word is, they're right in it. We saw the Clintons dead to rights on that Whitewater scandal. We've seen bodies upon bodies line up right past them like they're in line to give out free candy or something, like Halloween line or something. We've seen them almost untouchable. We've seen Trump promise to drain the swamp. We haven't seen the swamp drained at all. Is it almost so entrenched in our government and in everything that it's almost impossible to get them out? I mean, what are we looking at here?
Well, what you're looking at is fronts for the deep state. I believe when John Kennedy was assassinated November 22nd of 63, that was actually a coup. The Lee Harvey Oswald thing doesn't wash. And then they had a spate of political assassinations, Martin Luther King, his brother Robert Kennedy, and so forth. And they gradually, the shadow government took over. And President Eisenhower warned us about that in his farewell speech about the military-industrial complex. And it's
yes,
so big and so powerful that the people like the Bushes and the Clintons, they are crime syndicate families, and they're hiding behind legitimate positions in government, like the presidency or Hillary as Secretary of State or so forth. They operate their crime networks that intermingle with arms dealing, drug dealing, banks, Lockheed Martin, Boeing. It's huge. It's like an octopus. And they're just the front people, the cover-up artists for this bigger, deeper shadow government or deep state.
Okay, now we'll get back to that. I'm going to ask you a very pointed question. There's a rumor that New York, when they busted Anthony Weiner, that on his computer was a file called life insurance. On that file, supposedly, there's a rumor that we're hearing, and maybe true, you may add some, that there was Hillary Clinton was on there doing things to children and actually killing and eating children on that. I mean, what do you know about Clintons and pedophilia? Seconds.
Well,
possible.
That I made back on April 22nd of 99 when I was at ATF agent Butler's undercover residence for the ATF and DEA. I talked about that very thing. I talked about Kathy O'Brien.